What is going on, everybody? This is Albert Gim of No Ceilings NBA. Mm-hmm. And usually when I'm doing the Home and Away pod, first off, I didn't even realize we had that really cool intro video. I think I've been playing the wrong thing for the last two, three times I've been doing this pod. But today I have a very special guest. Usually I've got my brother Josh Lee with me, but today Josh is away visiting home. So we have the one and only, the living legend, Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing?
Your other brother, right? I'm doing awesome, man. I'm excited to be here. I missed Draft Deeper yesterday because of reasons that we're about to get into, but I'm super excited that you reached out to me to be on the show, man, to pitch it. I love being the guy that you call.
Dude, Steve, you've been an unbelievable super sub for me a couple times already. When I was hosting the No Ceilings NBA pod, the Draft Act NBA pod, and Corey was gone, we talked about Grady Dick, and that was an awesome pod. So I appreciate you coming on today as well. And for Josh and I, usually this is a pod where we get to deviate a little bit away from college basketball and the NBA and the NBA draft and talk about some other things. But with you being on the pod today, I did want to mix in a little bit of, a little bit of the stuff that Josh and I like to talk about, but also have you talk about the stuff that you love, which is scouting and basketball and college basketball. And you've been a very busy man. But before we get into all of that stuff, wanted to start off with a little bit of fun, what I kind of branded as sneaker talk. Just wanted to ask, because Josh and I are big basketball fashion sneaker culture type of guys.
Aficionados,
yeah. A little bit. Aficionados. That's a good one. That was really good. But what we wanted to do was kind of talk about what are some of your favorite shoes to wear? Number one, your favorite shoes to wear kind of casually out and about. If you guys didn't know, Steve's a dad. I believe, what's the number now? Like 45 kids, or is it 47?
I mean, it feels like every time I come home, there's another one in my house. But, you know, I have four kids, two boys, two girls. Actually, this past weekend was my youngest son's birthday. Wow. So we got to do some fun stuff out in Orlando, spending time. SeaWorld got a little bit of my money this past weekend. So that was fun.
Those parks are always super expensive. I don't know how you did that with four kids, but shouts to you, Dad. But wanted to ask, so what are your favorite shoes to wear casually out and about with the kids or running errands or whatever? And then a favorite pair of shoes that you like to wear on the court? Because believe it or not, guys, we at No Ceilings NBA, we don't just talk basketball, but we like to play as well, from what I understand. I know we do. But Steven, if you could just answer those first two for me.
Well, first, you know, I'm one of the best bench players for my work's intramural basketball team. So nice. I'm always waving the towel, doling out high fives. I'm a real, like, set screens, pass the ball, stuff like that. When I'm on the court, I don't have a lot of sneakers, first off. So, you know, when you were kind of introducing this whole segment, I just started, like, snickering to myself because I just wear I'm a basic dude, man. I wear some Nike Air Precision 2s. Okay. That's what I wear on the court. And when I'm off the court, typical dad attire, you know, the Sperry's are in vogue here in Southeast Georgia, Northeast Florida. So, you know, can't deviate from the culture down here in sunny Southeast Georgia.
Good. No, I love that. I love that, man. Dad attire is very important, especially if you're a dad. So it's important to play your part. I love what you said about being that good energy bench guy. Very Anderson Varejao-esque.
Yeah, absolutely. Slightly less curly hair. My work makes me trim it. Otherwise, I would be rocking a sweet fro for No Ceilings. But I come in and I do my thing, dude. I shoot a little bit. I love doing my Jason Williams, Steve Nash impressions with the passes and stuff like that. And the Nike Air Precision 2s helped me do that. So Nike, if you're listening, you know, I got you on an endorsement.
Nike, if you're listening, sponsor the podcasters. You know, Steven, I do want to say, this is something that I've been talking about with my buddy Josh for about like a year and a half, but I get it. Like when we were podcasting, there's nothing really athletic about what we're doing other than what we're talking about. Sure. But I do think it would be cool, because there are so many podcasters out there. It would be cool if Nike were to sponsor podcasters, you know, and like,
that would be sick.
Like, And the cool way to do that, right, is like, obviously, like, the easy stuff is like, okay, we wear this stuff when we're recording these pods and on screen, but also like doing a feature of how, like, look, podcasters also try to stay in shape. You know, we don't sit at a desk for 20 hours a day, and we're trying to go out and stay active and be fit and, you know, try to be not athletes per se, but athletic, you know. But I was wondering, like, I've been thinking about that, like, it would be cool if podcasters could be sponsored by athletic brands as well.
Well, I mean, if you think about basketball and podcasting, like, you have to be deadly in transition. You know what I mean? You have to be good going from one set. Are you okay? You have to be deadly going from one segment to another. So your transition game has to be on point. So there's some carryover between what we do on the mic and on the court.
Yeah. Steven, the dad aesthetic is incredible here.
I got dad drip.
It's unbelievable. I love it so much. Okay. So with you being on the pod today, obviously we're having some fun, but for me, this might be a little weird or not. I don't think it's weird at all, but I really wanted to take this time to get to know more about you as the writer, the podcast host, the evaluator, the scout. There are a lot of questions that I had for you, because I think it's funny, like, we are so busy talking about players and then, like, inviting, like, guests from other outlets onto our pods, but I think we very rarely dive deeper into who we are as a team and who we are individually as evaluators, who we are as scouts, as personalities as well, right? And so I think recently for you, you've been on the road quite a bit. I know you went on a trip with Corey to check out the OTE. I know you're at the University of Georgia. You're at UCF. You've been around a little bit. So wanted to start off with that. And I guess my first question that I wanted to ask is, being at these schools, so, like, you know, I've been to UCLA, been to a couple of other schools as well, been to Vegas for a couple of things, but going to these schools, checking out these players, checking out these teams, what's been, like, one really memorable thing that stuck out so far from you being on the road and checking out these different teams and players?
I just think kind of that first introduction into what actually takes place behind the scenes, because, you know, like, a lot of us here at No Ceilings, Albert, we're trailblazers, man. Like, we are, a lot of us don't have, you know, the traditional background and things like that, but man, we hustle hard. So I think, you know, there's a steep learning curve when it comes to that, and reminding yourself to be humble. And, you know, you always get told, act like you've been there before. But if you've never been there before, it's kind of hard to know how to act. So, you know, just kind of getting behind the curtain. That's been my biggest eye opener, is like the pregame stuff that you do for media people. And, you know, you walk in there and everybody knows each other, right? And here comes this, you know, newbie, so to speak, coming in, and I'm walking in there. I don't want to be a wallflower. You know, I like to walk up and introduce myself and shake people's hands and, you know, network a little bit. So that's been fun. You know, you get a little pregame meal, which is always kind of nice. That was something that I really wasn't fully expecting. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sitting down at the media row, and you get a pretty good view of what's going on the court. But the post-game stuff has been, like, the biggest eye-opener for me, you know, talking with players, like, face-to-face, talking with coaches, getting to meet, like, people on staff for these universities. It's really cool, man. Like, the whole experience, just the behind-the-scenes stuff has been, like, the biggest eye-opening portion for me.
No, I definitely agree with you, man. I think for me, I definitely had a moment, like, when I went to go see UCLA play I think they were playing Long Beach State. And I remember I was walking around. I got there like two and a half hours early. And I was just walking around like the main concourse area, heading over to the court. And I remember, like, I was literally just by myself, just walking. There's no one around me. And then, like, there's some security guards there. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, damn, like, this is real. Like, this is actually my life right now. And I'm, like, here as a media scout. They've given me this credential, and I'm walking around the court and I'm seeing the players warm up, and it's pretty surreal. And so, like, I definitely understand what you're saying. I think it's hilarious what you said about, like, the pregame food stuff. I remember when Rucker and I were in Vegas to go see, think it was a Pac-12 tournament. No, it was the it's like a Good Sam, one of those early season tournaments.
You've been to so many of these things, they're all just starting to blend together. Can I start asking you some questions, Albert?
No, that is not what I was trying to say. But we were at one of those, and I remember walking into the media room, and they had like sandwiches and salads and stuff, and I was like, in my head, I was like, oh my God, like this is free. They want us to actually, I know. So I remember Rucker and I think we were still kind of like, we're kind of like shy about it. And we just like grabbed like some Coke Zeros and went up to our seats. But Steven, I think it's really interesting how like, this is the type of stuff, as you mentioned, right? The behind the scenes, behind the curtain stuff that you don't know. But okay, speaking of food, other than the free food that they give you, have you had a meal like on your trips that was like really memorable, or you're at a stadium and like, oh, the stadium had poutine and it was fantastic? Did you have something like that?
Man, you know, I try to save money because of all the, you know, the family stuff that I have, you know, they're kind enough to feed me before the games. So I really kind of take advantage of that. But, you know, I'll make a couple little stops on the road. Like from where I live, when I went up to Georgia, that's about a six and a half hour drive, right? Wow. So a good little stretch. And, you know, I'd like to sit here and tell you that I go and check out like all the local cuisine and stuff like that, but I'm just ready to get there. I'm so anxious that I'll typically go and, you know, maybe stop at a sandwich place or something like that. But I haven't really taken the time to sit down and immerse myself within like a local establishment or anything like that. But I will say the best food that I've had, you know, going to these places is actually at the overtime facility. You know, they had some cool little finger foods and stuff like that, better for you. You know, like I definitely ate well at Georgia and at UCF, but, you know, burgers and pizza and stuff like that, stuff that sits heavy with you for the two and a half hours that you're scouting a game.
Dude, I think it depends. It depends on where you go, but yeah, food can be varying. But I'm surprised you didn't mention Chick-fil-A. I know you're a Chick-fil-A guy.
Yeah, so that's a funny story. You know, when Corey and I, we were scouting overtime, I actually got there a day before, and our contact there was really nice and let me go and scout them before Corey showed up. But then we get Corey, it's, you know, it's kind of later in the day, we're planning to go early. I get up before Corey, you know, it's probably the military side of me, but I get up and go pick up some Chick-fil-A breakfast. And I think that was the first time that Corey ever ate Chick-fil-A breakfast. So it was an honor to be able to serve him his first Chick-fil-A breakie. But it's pretty solid, man.
No, of course, Chick-fil-A is amazing. I understand why they close on Sundays, but it still breaks my heart. There have been so many times in my life where I was like, oh, let's go to Chick-fil-A on a Sunday, and they're just closed.
Dude, even me in the South, I still do it, and like I should know better. It's one of the things I actually teach you in school, you know, that you can't go to Chick-fil-A on Sundays.
Okay, so speaking of all that, right, you've been to OT, been to Georgia, been to UCF. Who had the best facilities? Now, I'm guessing you're going to say OTE, probably. Yeah. I might be wrong, but what about their facilities was so special? And the reason why I ask is because just going to UCLA and like just the arena itself, walking around, everything's so beautiful on campus. And then you walk inside and like they have literal like water fountains, and out of their water fountains comes out blue Gatorade. And I was like, this is literally the coolest thing ever that I have not seen.
It's a Mr. Deeds stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So was wondering who had the best facilities and why?
Well, so if you're talking about like full facilities, I would say the overtime, because everything is right there. You know, the where they're located in Atlanta, there's not really like a lot of, actually most of what's located around them is some residential area. So wow. They have their entire facilities are centrally located into one kind of major stadium. And it's actually really nice. You know, they have a, you know, film study, they got weight room, they have cuisine, they have multiple courts all within this one complex. And they're all beautifully done, man. Like everything that you see on TV, and, you know, you could talk however you want about the broadcast, but it's beautiful. Like they've done it up really well, and the entire stadium is very impressive. Like it's right up there with some of the, you know, your top universities, as far as, you know, appeal and, you know, how functional everything is.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, just from what I've seen on TV, obviously I haven't been there yet, but what I've seen from the telecast or broadcast, it does seem pretty nice. And I feel like they do a good job of like making it seem very modern and young and like appealing to kids, you know, like it looks like they'd have a lot of fun shooting TikToks there and, you know, dancing in front of stuff. So I think they've done a really great job, and it's great to hear you say that. Okay. So now this is the part where I wanted to get into more of you, right? Stephen Gillespie, the writer, the personality, the podcast host, all that stuff. When it comes to straight up like evaluating players, right? The first question that I wanted to ask is, you've been to a couple places now. If you had to pick, gun to your head, and I hate to put the gun to your head, right? But if
you could just ask me a question. It doesn't have to be life threatening, dude. Come on now.
I use that one a lot, and the more I think about it, I'm like, yeah, life's not that serious. I could just ask the question. But if you had to pick one prospect that you've seen live in person that was the most impressive to you, who would that player be?
I know that I might get like the recency bias thing, but in terms of like expectation, hype coming into the game, you know, all of that, I would say it was Taylor Hendricks, who I just recently saw this past weekend. I mean, he's already started getting like top 10 buzz and consideration and things like that before coming into the game. I actually had him at 13. And it's just real quick, Albert, it's so weird how like-minded the draft community can be sometimes. Like, it gets a rap for being divisive and argumentative and things like that. But it's weird how we can, like, you know, in one cohesive unit, like have a unifying thought. And I've heard so many people say that before the game they had Taylor Hendricks in that 13 range, and now you'll hear people say he's either 9 or 10, right? Like, just outside the top 10. But, you know, going and watching him, they played against ECU, which isn't a world beater, but they had a guy, Brandon Johnson, who really entertained at the back end of my top 100. And they matched up against each other, and Taylor Hendricks would just – he looked like the dude. I mean, it's very apparent he's NBA ready, and he scored, I think, like 25 points off the top of my head without going back and looking at everything. He was so impressive, but he did more than just like what he gets recognized nationally for, you know, as a shot blocker and 3-point shooter. You know, he cut well off the ball, the experimentation with the passing, you know, setting screens. He's used like more often, I think, he gets credit for as a screener. And that's with his current frame, which he also kind of gets knocked for right now, too. So he was just the most impressive in terms of living up to the hype and the expectations out of all of the prospects that I've seen so far.
Okay. No, that's fair. And to be honest, Steven, like, I'll say I was probably the latest when it comes to our website and our team in terms of being in on Taylor Hendricks. Like, I still personally have him the lowest on my board. And I think the reason why, and I kind of want to get into this a little bit with you, is that you, especially since you saw him live, you just mentioned that he's got some NBA readiness to him, right? You mentioned the shot blocking, the shooting, and then in person you found some of the passing chops, some of the cutting, the off-ball stuff, screen setting, whatever. I think for me, the difficulty that I've had with Hendricks till now was, I think I had trouble kind of placing him in a position, which is funny because why the hell am I doing that anyway? The NBA is going to be a positionless league, and it already is, right, in a lot of ways. But for whatever reason, like, I've always felt people have been projecting him as more of a wing, and I just didn't see that at all. And I really saw him as a four, and I wanted him to play like a modern four. You know, talking about it with Corey, and he was like, dude, like, relax. Like, it's not that serious. Like, he just, look at what he can do, what he's good at. And it's pretty incredible to see. And I think that definitely helped me. I know our very own Nathan Grubler just dropped his Monday morning piece, and he great piece, number one. Shouts to Nathan always. But he now has Hendricks in his top 10. And so I think it's perfect that you're on this pod so that I can ask you this. But you talk about the NBA readiness. You talked about some of the skills there. How do you project him? What does he look like on the next level to you? If you were an NBA front office, NBA coach, how would you try to utilize and try to mold Taylor Hendricks into like an NBA player? What does that look like for you, his developmental path?
Well, first, you know, Albert, I want to talk. I was recently on, just like many of us at No Ceilings were, with Metcalf on the Friday show, and I got to actually talk about Taylor Hendricks on that episode. And what I wrote about him like way back January 1st for the website, And the title of that piece was Taylor Made for the NBA, you know, and, you know, playoff of his name, obviously. But if you look at what the NBA is doing with what I'm calling modernized Twin Tower lineups, where you have a lot of length, but there's a lot of skill to it, right? Like you'll appreciate this, Albert. Remember the, you know, Rasheed and Ben Wallace, right? Of like course. How two kind of diametrically opposed skill sets, but they fit so beautifully together. The NBA has kind of embraced a little bit of that with, you know, look at teams like Cleveland, like Utah, with Orlando, even Minnesota to a certain extent with how they've experimented this year. I think Taylor kind of fits that same type of mold where you could look at Orlando the way they're constructed right now, right? And say, well, they got Franz Wagner, who's a little bit of a creator off the wing. They have Paolo Banchero, who's going to be their number one guy. They have Markelle Fultz. There's really not a spot on the floor that Taylor Hendricks can't occupy on that current roster right now and be a solid contributor. You know, I talked about how nationally he's looked at as a three-point shooter, which he has shot very well on significant volume all season long. The shot looks great in person too, by the way. And then weak side rim protection. So you're looking at a team like Orlando who has Wendell Carter Jr., who's a little bit undersized at the five, but very skilled. I think that he fits very nicely next to him. Paolo can still be perimeter oriented and get to his spots on the bully ball. And there's nothing that Franz Wagner can't do on an NBA court, right? So even a team like Orlando, who has multiple picks within the lottery this season, Utah, same thing. They just got rid of, you know, Jared Vanderbilt to the Los Angeles Lakers. Taylor Hendricks kind of fits that same type of mold where he's a defensive-minded, versatile forward who can do a little bit of everything on the court, right? So versatility, I think, is the name of the game for Hendricks, but it starts with his, you know, NBA-ready skill set of being a 3-and-D forward right off the jump.
I think the Vanderbilt comp is pretty awesome. I think I hate to say it, but Vanderbilt is, in my opinion, was criminally underrated for a while.
Yeah,
and he was a guy that I just loved watching play. I'm sure Metcalf felt the same when he was on the Timberwolves. But he's just a guy that can do so many things and plug so many holes for you. And okay, so Steven, I loved everything that you said, right? Ultimately, the versatility. And you know what I was wondering, though, as you were talking? Is it crazy to think that in like 2-minute spurts, like 2.5-minute spurts, that he could play a little bit of small ball five?
Well, and that's one of the other things that I talked with Metcalf about is like there's a lot of discord on can he be a 3-4? Can he be a 4-5? Is he just a straight up 4? And, you know, everything that you were just kind of pointing out. If he's going to be a 5, he's got to fill out. Now, he's a young man. He's got the frame that can support it. There's only so much weight you can put on in a short amount of time. I think once he gets into his grown man body, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I was the most concerned about with his overall game was the rebounding, even against kind of like a smaller team in ECU. You could see that he gets moved off his spots really easily. But once he starts adding that strength, and I would say it's probably lineup dependent, he might be able to give you some minutes as a small ball five. But ultimately, I kind of look at him more as like it's lineup dependent. You know what I mean? Like, I would say it depends on who they go up against, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is an effective small ball five.
I think my favorite thing from what you just said is you called him a young man. And for our listeners out there, you, myself, and Rucker are all the same age. And we are now of the age where, you know, these prospects are young men to us.
I hate calling them kids. I don't like what's associated with the whole kid thing. You know, you're old enough to do certain things at the age that Taylor Hendricks is at, right? So give him a little bit of credit as a man.
For sure. Young man is great. But I think it's just hilarious that you and I are of that age now. And I will say, hey, the three of us being, well, we're all turning 33 this year. We have our grown man strength now. So if you ever see me, Rucker, and Steven, stay away, okay? Because
super easy to put on weight at this age. Wait till he gets 33.
That is very true. But with everything that you said, I love that. And I wanted to throw a comp at you. If you hate it, tell me you hate it. Tell me I'm an idiot.
You an idiot, but I'll hate your comp. Okay.
I was wondering to myself, could his career trajectory at the high end be like a Kyle Kuzma type? Is that crazy?
No, it's not. It's not crazy. I'll say that. I'll go ahead and get into one of the questions that I asked him, if that's okay. So, in terms of development throughout the year, you know, I asked Taylor post game that, you know, hey, I think most people would recognize you as a 3-point shooter and as a shot blocker. You've shown great improvement in a lot of different areas of your game, like the cutting, the screening, things that I talked about. I would even say rebounding to a certain degree, but the ball handling hasn't been there, right? And I didn't mention that in my question. I kind of wanted to see how he would answer what he thinks that he needs to improve on the most. And he went straight into the ball handling. And I think that that's something that Kyle Kuzma had, you know, coming into the NBA as a small ball for, as a young man coming into the into the NBA. He was able to do a little bit with the ball in his hand and transition and stuff like that. Taylor really relies on being set up at this point in his career. So I would say if that's going to happen, the ball handling has to take drastic improvement. But I wouldn't rule anything out with him.
For sure. I love the mind games that you're playing with these young men, and that you're coercing them into the answers that you want.
I'm trying to get them to show how young of men they actually are whenever they're
these questions. But Stephen, I love that you kind of, I wouldn't say you finagled it, but like you did a great job of getting the answer that you wanted, right? Like I think I brought up Kuzma because it's exactly that. If Hendricks can eventually get his handle to a point where he can do Kuzma type of stuff, then that's a really exciting outcome for teams, because people may not be paying attention to the season, but Kyle Kuzma is having a really great season for the Washington Wizards, you know, and he's a guy who has grown and developed over the course of his career, whether he was on the Lakers or wherever. And the shooting has gotten better for him, but the defense has kind of always been there. Well, not always been there, but he's a really solid defender, you know, and it seems like Hendricks has that. But with Kuzma, as you mentioned, he's had the handle. He can create and get shots for himself and create for others. And I think that's where Hendricks was lacking. So for me, in my mind, when I saw people talking about Hendricks kind of as like a wing, I was like, well, there I have some disconnect, because for me, it's like for you to be a wing, you kind of have to have that handle. You have to be able to create for yourself. But I'm with you. I just don't think that's there.
Look at what certain teams can do. Like Cleveland is a little bit of a unicorn in this aspect, but Lauri Markkanen at the three, you know, that's where I get into like the whole, it really depends on where he lands as opposed to like what position and things like that that he'll play. And there are certain prospects where it's team dependent kind of in a negative way. You know what I mean? But for Taylor, he's so, like I said, he's so versatile coming in that his developmental path could, like if there's multiverses out there, right, and we can look at all of them, I think Taylor might have one of the more diverse, you know, outcomes throughout the multiverse in terms of how he turns out.
I love that you just threw multiverse in there, because you're the best, man. You're that
Ant-Man and Wasp was a great movie.
You know, do you actually liked it, huh?
Dude, it's crazy. I typically will watch a movie to enjoy it and not to like find things that I hate about it. I know that that's like a crazy concept for young men nowadays, but I actually go to the movies to try to like have a good time and enjoy a movie. But I was impressed.
Okay. I won't hate you for it. I think for me,
Kuzma comp right here, saying that I like the Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I think I just struggled with the pacing of the movie. I felt like we kind of just skipped through things. And then like, I will say though, I think Jonathan Majors as King the Conqueror was incredible. Yes. And I just saw him in Creed 3 last weekend and he was incredible.
How was it?
I think the movie was good and he was incredible.
Did he make the movie?
He carried, it was to the point, Stephen, and I don't say this lightly, he blew Michael B. Jordan out of the water. He actually did, and he was incredible. Like I won't spoil it for you. I really do hope you get to go see the movie in theaters, because it's a great experience, and he was incredible, and I thought he was good in Ant-Man too. So okay, let me stop there. We're not here to talk about movies, but so you're talking about Hendricks, talked about what you saw. You said he was the most impressive prospect that you saw up close. I feel like any scout, any evaluator out there, you're going to kind of have your biases. There are certain things that you look for in players, certain things that you prefer in players, certain things that like certain tools or gifts and talents where you're like, oh, I really like guys who are like this, right? What are some of your biases as a scout? What are certain things that if a prospect has these things, I'm going to kind of be more inclined to like them than others?
I think length at their position is going to be one of the big things, because even if you're a smaller guy, you know, having length will certainly make up for it. One thing that, you know, I've done this year was I tried to get more into like my analytical dives, and I've mentioned this on a number of shows, and, you know, Maxwell and I have shared thoughts on this too. If you look at the players that typically will succeed the most and like have go on to have successful NBA careers, their rebounding numbers in terms of percentages actually are more indicative than what I think people will give them credit for. Even guards, right? Like even smaller players will have these obscene rebounding numbers. So a player like Brandon Pajemski, who I had the pleasure of interviewing earlier on in the year, his rebound numbers are absurd. And some people will look at that and say, you know, what do we make of this? Because is this something that he's crashing the boards that hard, or is it scheme for him to come up with these rebounds for grab and go opportunities and stuff like that? That's where I kind of diverge from the analytical side and use that to kind of support what I'm seeing on the floor. But, you know, I love length. I love the rebounding for the position. For big man, you know, being able to, I know that we talk about good hands and good feet throughout different areas of no ceilings all the time, but it really is true when you look at big man. That's why I like Trayce Jackson-Davis so much this year, is that his footwork is impeccable. His body contortion is impeccable, but the way that he can just go to different angles when scoring in the paint is just freaking insane. And then, you know, I'm a sucker for steal and block percentages just like anybody else. So when I see a player have those, I kind of have a tendency to go, okay, let me check out and see what this guy is doing, you know, whether he's a namer or not. So those are kind of some of my biases. I'm a big, you know, shooting is important for every position nowadays. So I feel like that's an easy answer, but those are kind of some of my biases when I'm evaluating scout or players.
No, that's awesome, man. And I feel like those are really important skills to have in the modern NBA. Teams really like guys who are long. And I think it makes sense for us to be looking for those things. Okay. If you had to pick a player who embodies all that, everything that you talked about, length and rebounding and shooting and all that stuff, block percentage, steal, whatever, who would be a player that kind of embodies all of that for you? When I'm looking for players, I like this type of guy. If you had to name somebody, I won't put a gun to your head this time.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm a little bit more comfortable asking your question or answering your question now. I know I'm cheating by saying Taylor Hendricks, so I'll put him in there. I like Brandon Miller a lot as a prospect and everything that he's been doing this year. Jairus Walker is another guy who I was kind of late to the party. These multifaceted, you know, I like Cason Wallace a lot as a guard, even though that he's not really a lead guy. And then another player who, okay, here's another bias I have. Sorry. I'm kind of catching up to some of my previous drafting experience. So I love guards that aren't necessarily like the most bursty, but they're slippery. Like I was a big Tyrese Halliburton guy whenever he was coming up. And, you know, there was a, you know, when this was when LaMelo Ball was coming out also, right? So you had like the high flash, pretty athletic guard. And then you kind of had like this kind of pokey, proddy, really efficient, kind of snakes his way into stuff with Halliburton. Love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for a lot of those same reasons. Jalen Husafino is another guy who kind of fits that type of mold for me, where he's not super bursty, super poppy, anything like that. He just knows how to like get to his spots. He has a crazy efficient mid-range game. He's growing as a playmaker. I think the shot will translate out, but I'm getting to a scary place with him where I'm like, who wouldn't I entertain, you know, JHS over right now in terms of guard prospects? It's like I said, I don't know if it's just because it's early March right now and I'm bored, but I'm starting to get to a scary place with JHS.
No, I love all that, man. I think for me, that all makes sense. I think the guys that you named are really good players and guys that really do embody everything that you mentioned. I think for me personally, like I just like guys that are versatile. I like guys who can do multiple things and guys who can do things that are like not normal for their size. I like bigger guys who have guard skills, bigger guys that can shoot. I've always liked those types of guys. I like guards who like I generally like guards who are 6'5". Which is like a weird thing, but like if you're 6'4", for whatever reason, I don't love you.
You're trash at that point.
I know.
Yeah.
But if that you're 6'5",
makes a difference.
Exactly, you know? Maybe it's a Michael Jordan thing, I don't know. But if you're like 6'4 and under, like I have question marks. But if you're 6'5 and up, I'm like, oh, you're good. Which is why like I loved, like back in the day, like, yeah. Josh Hart was a guy coming out of college. I was like, oh, you're going to be great. You're going to be fantastic. Mm. I was I wrong? I don't know. I think he's really good. He's a Knick
really good basketball player.
I love him on the Knicks. And in this draft, like I'm writing about him this week, but I love Kobe Jones. And like, I love that he's 6'5". Yeah. If he was 6'4", if he was 6'3", I'd be out on him. But because he's 6'5", and some people have him listed as 6'6", I'm like, all right, perfect. You're the guy that I'm going to be in love with, you know? But I also like, you know, bigger guys who have like toolsy that have some gifts, have some guard skills. Jed Howard, I wrote about him, have him in my top five. He hasn't left. Don't care what anybody says. Don't care about his perceived cold streak of 8 games where he had like a busted ankle, whatever. I'm not going to freak out. I think he's still going to be really good. He's not in my top five. But I like those types of guys. Obviously, I like guys who can shoot. But if I had to pick one guy, it'd be Lamar Odom. Like I've always loved.
I love Lamar. Thank Lamar you, Odom. Dude. Like Hedu Turkoglu is another guy right. that I was super big fan of coming up. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question, though?
Sure.
What's a bigger problem for you, a guard who is 6'4 or a center who is 6'8?
Guard is 6'4. I don't mind centers who are 6'8 because Ben Wallace and Draymond Green and others have taught me to, you know, not
Chuck worry. Hayes.
Chuck Hayes. Yeah. Haven't thought about Chuck Hayes in a minute. But yeah, you know, like I think it really depends. I mean, because when we're talking about like centers and rim protection and interior defense, like I think so much of that is not so much about your height, but anticipation and processing and length and strength. And there's so many different things, right? Footwork and all that stuff. But like a 6'4 guard, for whatever reason, like bothers me. Like if you're a 6'4 shooting guard, like I don't love you. But then again, it's not exactly true because I love Scoot Emmanuel Henderson.
Quickly.
I know, like, I love Scoot. He's 6'2", and I loved Tyrese Maxey when he was coming out. He's, like, 6'2", 6'3". Emmanuel Quickly, I love, but I'd be over the moon if he was 6'5". I'm weird, man. I get it. Like, I say things, and I don't mean them. Maybe I have no idea what's going on here. But
I love it, man. I love it. I mean, people are getting premium content right now. The scouts that will admit biases and faults that they have in their process.
Yeah. But I will say this, Steven. The Halliburton piece, I really dropped the ball on that one. Halliburton was a guy that I think I had ranked like 11th or 12th. And looking back on it now, I'm like, what was I thinking? Like the guy was incredible. Yeah, the shot looks weird, but the shot goes in pretty. So
I had him 4. I really like him. I even entered. I was in a dark place where I was thinking about putting him over a LaMelo Ball.
That's a bright place. That's a bright place because you may end up right on that, on the right side of history on that. Who knows, right?
I mean, you never know, but I certainly got 1 through 3 wrong, I would say, for that class, for what it's worth. So,
the next question that I had was, you are at these like post game stuff, right? Media access, whatever. I will say, I did want to give you some kudos, some props, right? I feel like you've asked some really good questions. Like even the Taylor Andrews question that you asked, I thought was really good. Of the players that you've talked to and the questions that you've gotten to ask, whatever, who gave you the best answers? Who was like the most eloquent? Who was like, it felt like, you know, they're really, you know, well-spoken, really thought about their answer, gave you really good answers. Who would you say was the best to interview so far?
Well, so if I'm talking like interview straight up, I didn't get a chance to do it at a game or anything, but, you know, speaking with Bubby Klintman out of Wake Forest, the Swede freak, as he is referred to, he's a big Giannis fan, if the nickname didn't give it away, but talking with him about his upbringing in Sweden and coming over to play in Kansas with Grady Dick was just crazy. And then talking about, you know, his world play experience, talking about going to go play for Wake Forest and things like that. Just extremely likable young man. If I had a daughter his age, like he could marry my daughter type kid. So, or young man, excuse me. He was just extremely eloquent, very humble, very respectful. And he, as of late, has been tearing it up. So really happy to kind of see the second half performance for him. But in person, I would say Amen Thompson, when I got to ask him the question about, you know, what's he doing when he's not playing basketball, and he says, you know, he gets on 2K and he beats up Asar and all that fun stuff was really fun. So, you know, getting to see him light up about something other than basketball, I think that's a big thing that a lot of a lot of us in the media have to remember is that as much as we want to pretend like the only thing that these, you know, young men are allowed to think about is basketball, they have lives that exist off the court and things like that. So being able to see him light up and talk about something other than, you know, practice or film study or, you know, what's he need to work on and all that other stuff, you know, seeing how he's a LeBron James fan but plays with Steph Curry and the Warriors on 2K and he beats up his brother on video games, just seeing that little bit of a, you know, human aspect to him was pretty cool.
No, for sure, dude. I think you made a great point. These guys are human. These guys are people. They have lives outside of the basketball court. And I think we can forget that. We can. And a lot goes on. And, you know, there's been that viral clip of that guy talking about Kyrie Irving's dad and the whole story and how Kyrie came to be who he is. And it was pretty moving to watch that, you know? And I was like, oh, like, it's easy for us to point fingers. It's easy for us to judge, to cast judgment on people and to, you know, critique and criticize people based off of what we see just off film and off the screen and what they are doing in front of a camera. But these people have real lives and real histories and real context. And I think you made a really good point, man. I think we need to always remember that about these players, that they have real lives and real situations. And, you know, I don't say any of this to excuse any bad behavior or anything like that, but it kind of is what it is. You know, people go through stuff. And even like recently, everything going on with Ja Morant, like I understand, not that I understand what he's done. Not trying to excuse any of that, but I still think that there's a lot of potential with that guy. And I think he might need some help. He might need some guidance. He might need some, you know, talking to. But I think he's awesome. And I think he's going to be better. And he's going to be, this could be a great turning point for him, a launch pad even for him to learn and grow from this and, you know, move on to have a great career. So, yeah, I just really love that point that you made because sometimes we can forget that.
Yeah, I mean, we want to pretend that, you know, like I said, these guys are just robots. They make a lot of money, so they don't feel, they don't think, they don't do anything. They're only for our entertainment. And, you know, I think it's easy to kind of come to that kind of rudimentary thinking there. But, yeah, I mean, even though that what Amen talked about wasn't as, like, as a deep thing or anything like that, it's just, there's so much context that we're not privy to knowing. And then we come up with such definitive statements and thought processes and stuff like that. I'm always in the mindset, like, if you don't know 50% of it, you probably should kind of just keep your opinion to yourself. You know?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Okay. So where I wanted to go next was, and this is pretty, I won't lie, this is selfishly for me. Because where I'm at is, you know, when it comes to, you know, you and I and the rest of the people, our people here at No Ceilings, we do a good amount of writing. And I think for me, the writing process has always been kind of a difficult thing. Like, I know I'm not like you and Nathan and Maxwell, where you guys are writing every single week. Like, that's really difficult for me and like my process and the way that, like, I just need more time because I number one, like I've always been, and I've had really great conversations with people, even at our website, just I've always been pretty insecure about my writing. And so like, I've always felt like I needed more time to kind of vet myself and make sure like everything's accurate or whatever. Like I can be pretty hard on myself, you know, as I'm writing these pieces, but I wanted to ask what your writing process is like, you know, as you're pretty much posting every weekend for us. And honestly, your writing's gotten a ton of traction and a lot of viewers and readers. But I wanted to ask you, how are you preparing for your pieces? Where are you drawing inspiration from? What is that process like for you on a weekly basis?
Well, it's so weird too, man, because growing up, I didn't read a lot. I wasn't a big reader. I feel like I kind of had a knack for writing, you know, even in college, when I did attend classes, and I would like put my effort into my writing. My teachers always kind of liked my work and I never really pursued it like at any level at all. So, being able to do what I do at No Ceilings, man, it's a big blessing because like I said, I'm more of a worker than I am anything else. Like I'm not trained in like the historical sense that you would expect someone who's in sports media or anything like that to have come up on. Right. So a lot of what I do is just based on pieces that I've read at other sporting outlets and stuff like that. My process is kind of similar to you, man, where I do a little bit day by day because, you know, of my day job and, you know, family obligations and stuff like that. I can't pump out. There's people on our staff who can be like, oh, okay, my piece comes out in like 12 hours. Let me just jam this out real quick. And they can do it and they'll do a hell of a job and you couldn't even know it. I am not that talented at all. Like, I need a full week. My inspiration comes from players I like, you know, thought pieces. You know, one of my favorite pieces that I've done this year was the lock draft. And that was because I had to fill in, you know, and it was just like,
for me,
huh. Well, yeah. So I filled in for you. Right. And I kind of was like, I also don't know what to write about, but I'm like such a yes man. You know what I mean? Like I'm trained at my job. If I see a hole, like run in and jump and fill it, like no questions asked. So I raise my hand and I'm like, man, I don't know what to do. So sometimes my process is like, let me just think of something crazy. Like, what have I not tried yet? And that's where the lock draft process came up on. And it was just like, I haven't even heard of this. I'm not like patting myself on the back, but I don't know where I got that idea from. Like, that inspiration was just kind of like, could have been like, you know, a divine thing just placed upon me. I have no idea, but I just wrote it. I like to just shake things up a lot, but my inspiration could be something that I watched that week, just a crazy thought that popped into my head. Or sometimes, man, shout out to Nathan, I'll just be like, who should I write about this week? And he'll be like, here's a name. And then I'll start watching film and stuff like that, and that'll start getting my juices going, and I'll be like, okay, yeah, this is a pretty cool prospect to watch and talk about and stuff like that. So if I'm not feeling it myself, man, just, you know, the family at No Ceilings is a big inspiration and motivation for me to keep pushing and doing better.
I think that's interesting, dude. I think the process of writing and just like the process overall can be such a trip sometimes. And I think for me, like I really struggle. Number one,
can I interrupt real quick?
For sure.
I keep hearing that you struggle and you're insecure about your writing and stuff like that. And I promise you, Albert, you know me well enough. And if I'm blowing smoke and if I'm not, yeah. I swear I'm not. You have one of like the best writing styles on the entire staff. And I look forward to your Pedro Pascal piece. Mm-hmm. You got on to me for trying to peek because I saw the title for the website that we use. I saw it and I was like, what the heck? Like, in my head, I was like, this has to be Albert because nobody else could pull this off. And then when it dropped, I was just like, only Garbage Time Gim could pull off something like this and just make it like totally awesome. The use of pop culture and things like that is just phenomenal, man. So kind of similar to how I was talking about with the Men Thompson, like even as writers and stuff like that, man, like we're people and you don't really know what's going on. But when I see, it's like seeing a Men Thompson play basketball, right? Like there's a lot of things about his game where you're like, this translates, like he's super talented. Like he has all the tools. Like I can read that about your work. And then you'd be like, I'm struggling, I'm insecure. And like, well, damn, like he's super talented. What does he got to be insecure about? You know,
I, Steve, number one, I appreciate that. That's incredible praise coming from you. I think just for me, like if I can explain a little bit, it's just like, I think I just want it to be good. It's as simple as that, you know, like in my brain, I'm just like, I want what I'm pumping out there to be good. I want it to be entertaining. I want people to read what I'm writing and be like, okay, this is distinctively Albert, uniquely Albert is kind of like where my mind goes. And I think that can be a really difficult exercise for me at times, you know, and which is why, like, I feel like I'm very thankful that we have me on a bi-weekly writing schedule, just because like for my brain to get there and to absorb a player, because like for me, it's really important that I write about a player that I like. And if I don't like him, it's really hard for me to write about him because I just don't want to ever be disingenuous about what I'm writing. So like that's like a whole process, and then like pinpointing exactly why I like a player and then thinking about how can I effectively then deliver why I like this player so much to the people who are reading my, you get what I'm saying? Like there's so many levels.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hard part, I think, for us as writers, where ultimately we want to relay a message, and that message is we like this player or don't like this player, but we want to do that effectively so that our readers, number one, care about what we're writing about, and then also walk away having learned something or, you know, having felt something. And I think that's where my mind goes, you know?
I think what you're saying, I would say if you gave like a lot of, you know, writers and podcasters truth serum, they would answer you very similarly to where there, it feels like they're such a burden, right? Like with the incredible success that, you know, No Ceilings is having as a platform, like there's places that I'm traveling and I tell people what I do, like, oh, you're with those, like there are people that know what we do, and which is phenomenal. And I love that part. But with that, there's a little bit of a burden with expectation, right? Because when you're in the public's eye, you're transforming into a place where people go to get information. You want to make sure that you're giving the absolute best information that you possibly can. And then for you, Albert, like how you're saying, you got to make it uniquely you. You do that with every piece, right? So there are certain aspects of my writing where I do try to be unique and stuff like that as well. Yeah. But I don't pull like the pop culture stuff the way that you do, right? So some of your writing might just be like timed based on what's going on around us. So that's like a whole nother layer that you have to like bake into your writing that, you know, I would say, thankfully, I don't necessarily do all the time. So I could definitely understand why that would be a little bit more challenging on your end.
Yeah, no, number one, once again, appreciate the kind words. But like for all of us though, like I see all the content that we pump out every single day, and I read our website, and I don't always say something just because like I always try to be pretty reserved with my words. Especially like when it comes to like group stuff, if for our listeners out there, if you've ever been a part of a group chat, like things can get crazy. So I try to be a little bit more reserved in our group chat, but just like reading all the stuff that you guys are doing and pumping out there, it really does amaze me. Even earlier in this pod, you referred to your top 100, and in my head, I was like, oh my God, Steven has the top 100. Like this is a,
you don't want to know, you don't want to know the number that I have on Wordcast rank.
But I like, even before you came to No Ceilings, like I remember you posting your big boards and mock drafts when you were elsewhere. And I was always like, wow, this guy's like incredible. Like the volume and the scope and the range that you have and all that, this is incredible, which kind of leads me to my next thing. My next question for you we're probably going to start wrap it up. I didn't realize we're 52 minutes in.
This has been great. Like just like, you know, what would you want to call this? Like therapy session, right? For like podcast or content creator therapy.
Yeah, I hope our listeners out there, if you are a podcast host or creator or writer or whatever, I hope this has been informative to you. But I wanted to ask about your whole podcasting thing. Now, you and I first met when you were a part of the Off the Ball Network, and you actually invited me to come onto your pod to talk about draft stuff. And we talked about Will Richardson, who's still in college somehow.
Shout out to Will Richardson, man. Like, still holding out hope that he can figure some stuff out.
But I wanted to ask you, now being a co-host for the Draft Deeper podcast and working with Nathan and working with Maxwell, was just wondering what that experience has been like for you. Have things changed for you at all? What's that dynamic like? And even like on a very basic level, you guys host a pod with the three of you guys, and having three guys over StreamYard or Zoom or whatever, it's not always the easiest to like time when to talk and how long to listen for and how to react. And sometimes you forget to mute your mic and suddenly you're coughing into your mic. There's so many different variables going on.
I feel personally attacked when you say
I literally did that four times this pod, but was wondering what that's been like for you as an experience since you've come over to No Ceilings.
Well, first off, man, like any opportunity that I hear someone mention Off the Ball in my time there, you know, just Chris, like the entire Jeff, Mo, like the entire crew, I'm super grateful for the time and the experience that I got with such great group of dudes, man, who just flat out just love sports, like every aspect of it. And you know, that's where I really got to meet you guys and, you know, start networking and things like that. So I don't take my time there for granted at all. But working with Nathan, man, it's been great. You know, one of the first bits of good news about, other than, you know, being accepted into No Ceilings, was that Nathan reached out to me on his own and was like, hey, man, like the good news isn't over. I'm like, what's up? He goes, I want you to co-host Draft Deeper with me. So when I got picked up, I believe it was like January of last year for No Ceilings, Nathan and I started co-hosting. So that really helped me like get to know him. And then throughout the year before Maxwell and I joined No Ceilings, like he and I kind of started our own little side venture together called Pick and Roll, where we did a little bit of work on the side together, where we talked about prospects and big boards and things like that. So I've had experience podcasting with the both of them, like on a two-man front. I was on assignment with when Nathan, when he emailed me about Maxwell coming on. I was like, okay, this ought to be good because like I love both of those dudes. So we started talking about how the three-man weave essentially was going to work with us. And, you know, Maxwell was being brought on as the lead co-host, and Nathan obviously is the guy. So Nathan does a tremendous job of setting us up. Like he lets us know what the topics are coming into every show. It'll be based off of some of our writing or some of, you know, observations that we've made on Twitter, or, you know, if we go and see prospects in person, things like that. So we have a general idea of like when the conversation is going to get shifted to different guys. I try to do a little hand raise technique whenever I'm ready to speak and things like that, because there are little moments where we talk over each other, but the building the chemistry with the three of us over this year, when we, you know, when we started doing our big three podcasting together, it's just picking up on little things from each other. Those little nuances, like it's not this too dissimilar, Nike, if you're listening, to how basketball is played, right? So you kind of pick up on little body languages, you know, if someone kind of opens their mouth just a little bit, like, okay, Maxwell's ready to talk. Yeah. Or if I see Nathan like make a face whenever I'm giving a take, which rarely ever happens, Nathan always agrees with what I say. But I kind of know when guys are going to say stuff.
The one thing I want to say about your pod that you guys do together, I love the chemistry that the three of you guys have. I feel like, number one, just like audibly, the three of you guys have very distinct voices. You've got this like really deep voice and it sounds great. And then Nathan has his voice.
Southern gentleman. Yeah.
Southern gentleman. Yeah. And then Maxwell's voice is a little bit more high pitch, but it's like very like sharp. His voice, I would say, it's like really clear and easy to listen to. Like all of you guys sound very unique and different, and it sounds great together because of how unique and different you guys are. I do like that there are three of you guys though, because it just adds to the variability of what you guys are talking about and the perspective that you guys are giving. But I just wanted to ask, because it was incredible. It's still incredible and interesting for me to see three guys together on like a weekly basis talking about stuff, because it can be easy. Like even for Corey and I've been potting now with Corey for like 2 years. And we,
feels like, I mean this in the best way, it feels like it's been longer. I feel like I've known you and Corey being on Draft Deck together. It feels like almost my whole adult life just because y'all are just like so natural together, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think like even for us, there was like a little bit of a learning curve. And I think Corey does a great job at, number one, hosting. And then, you know, I think we always try to be super respectful of each other's time and reacting to each other and timing, like when to cut in or whatever, and trying not to interrupt each other too much, because like I get it, like some people like that, like that's why like talking head shows exist and people like when they yell at each other and whatever. But Corey and I, we don't have that dynamic. I think, not to say that those people don't respect each other, but I think for us, like we definitely really try to respect each other and each other's time. So but even for us, like in the beginning, it took some time for us to kind of get our groove, and we had to learn about each other as human beings too. And now like I feel like I know so much about Corey and his family, and he knows a lot about me and my family. And like that's the thing, like you mentioned with basketball players, they're players on the court but also have lives off of it, and they have personalities and context. And I think even for podcasters, please don't come for me saying that I'm trying to compare podcasters to athletes, but even for
we are the exact same. We are athletes.
But even for us, we're people, you know, and, you know, we get to know each other and we build relationships, and all of this then kind of, in my opinion, feeds into the mic, you know, the rapport that you have, the camaraderie you have, yeah, the connection, the relationship, all that then comes through the mic. And I think people can feel that. So I just want to say, I feel that with you and Maxwell and Nathan as well. Like, I feel like you guys genuinely like each other. You guys genuinely respect each other. You listen to each other's opinions. I think you guys are learning from each other. And I think that's the beautiful part of like your team, but also most teams. Like, that's how it should be, you know. So did want to give you that. And before we wrap up, I know we're about to hit the hour mark. Wanted to ask, like, you know, at the end we like to do kind of like, what are you watching type of thing. I already know you're going to be like, hey, I've got, you know, 44 kids, what time do you think I have? But still, you know, you just mentioned Ant-Man.
I'm TV a little bit.
Exactly. I'm glad you got to see Ant-Man. But other than basketball, because we essentially just talk about basketball all the time, and I love it, and I love you guys for it, but I'm a little bit different, and I think that comes out of my writing too, where, like, as much as I love basketball, I kind of need that to be on par with everything else in my life as well, where I really do prioritize my personal life a lot, and, like, my friends. And if you guys follow me on Instagram, it's at Albert. No, what is my Instagram handle? I don't even know. I think it's GTGNBA.
I don't answer that much.
Okay, but if you guys follow my Instagram account, you'll see that I spend a lot of time with my close friends, and we go out in LA, and we like to eat at great restaurants and whatever, because I really do believe that we need that time away from basketball as well. And so, Steven, for you, whether it's a TV show you're watching with your kids or with your wife or just on your own, and it could even be, I don't know, a book you're reading, any type of so essentially the question is, what's something that you're consuming outside of basketball that's for you?
Yeah. So like my head was going to consumable media, like as you were breaking that down. First off, as a dad with 192 kids, I would say that one of the most accurate, like, kid shows that I think a lot of parents will agree with this. They're probably already saying it as I'm walking into my answer. Bluey, shout out. Bluey is like the GOAT show that I think parents, like, actually enjoy watching with their kids. It's an incredibly funny show. It's, you know, family of dogs that live in Australia. And it is, I literally laugh out loud almost every time I'll watch that show. It's fantastic. But when I'm not watching kid appropriate shows, my wife and I, she has got me suckered in to, like, the most trash TV, and I love it. So she is really big into, like, cryptology and stuff like that, and she believes that Bigfoot's real. I'm not here to say one way or the other, but she got me into the show called Mountain Monsters, and it's on Discovery Plus for anybody who's interested. And it is about a team of just lovable hillbilly redneck bumpkins, and I can say that because, you know, I'm from Arkansas, who go out in search of, like, these mythological creatures. It's them in overalls and shotguns, just a bunch of obscenities, just looking for things that aren't real. And it is just, like, one of the most fun times watching TV that you'll have. And then she's also got me into this other show on Discovery Plus called Lone Star Law, which is about, you know, like, game wardens and stuff like that based out of Texas, and some of the stuff that they get into as far as, like, you know, they help out with border patrol. They see if people are catching legal fish and stuff like that. And it's set, like, as I'm explaining, it sounds terrible, but I promise you, like, it's actually a pretty entertaining show. I'm also super big into, you know, spending time with my son. He's big into Pokemon. You and I, we were raised on the Pokemon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, ever since we were young men, we loved Pokemon, and now I get to, like, keep that tradition up with Trevor, my oldest. And I'm a big nerd too, so, like, anything like DC or Marvel related, like, I am constantly in theaters or streaming services, things like that, to keep up with all of those.
Dude, that was even better than I was expecting. I had no idea where you're gonna go with that. Just to recap, you mentioned Bluey, Mountain Monsters, some
Texas Lone Star Law.
Star Law. You mentioned Pokemon. This was incredible. That was a Stephen Gillespie-esque answer. That was amazing.
I am just a ball of everything, dude. I don't
shouts to us though for being of the age of the original Pokemon. I think it was like original 150, right?
Oh,
I believe.
Speaking of stuff that we were raised on, have you seen what they're doing with this new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Mutant Mayhem? I am stupid excited for this. Like the cast, they're going to have John Cena. They're going to have Seth Rogen, Paul Rudd. Mm-hmm. I think Post Malone is going to be a voice in it. And all, Ice Cube is going to be in it. It's going to be awesome. I'm so excited for Mutant Mayhem.
The trailer dropped and it looked incredible. Number one, I really like the drawing style that they went with. It looks really cool, really grungy, which is appropriate because these guys live in the sewer, right? Like this is what it should look like. I think it's exciting, man. It looks awesome. It looks really great. But okay, with that said, Steven, this was incredibly fun for me. And I thank you again for filling in. As you mentioned, that's kind of something that you really enjoy doing, and you've done it again here with our pod. And I really appreciate you coming on and filling in here. But before we go, if you can kind of just let our listeners know where to find you.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, if you're listening today, you probably already listened to Draft Deeper the day before. Again, I wasn't on that show, but normally I am. We try our best to get all three of us on at the same time. But that's the great thing about having a three-man show. If one of us have something going on, we still have a co-host baked in right there. But I'm active on Twitter. Please feel free to follow me, engage with me, you know, DM me, whatever, at Stephen G Hoops. That's where I'm most active on Twitter. And then you can find all my written work at noceilingsnba.com, where everything is free 99 with a discount. If all you have to do is just say that I you know, mention me whenever you go to the website, and you'll get a free article.
That is awesome. My name's Albert Gim, and you can also find all my written work at noceilingsnba.com. My Twitter handle is Alberto Gim is my Twitter handle, and on Instagram I am at GTGNBA is where you can find me. And next week, I don't know who's hosting this pod next week. I don't remember the schedule, but you'll have to tune in and find out. And I hope you guys enjoyed this one. If you like me, you can find me on the Draft Deck NBA pod, also part of the No Ceilings podcast network. And that is pretty much it. We thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you guys next week. Later, y'all.
Peace.